This episode of Guitar Radio Show is brought to you in part by...
Isn't it time for a truly custom-made guitar? Unique design and construction. Handmade in America. Innovation to fuel your inspiration. Go to DNAGuitarCompany.com.
And also by...
Hey everybody, Mark Davin from Guitar Radio Show. Have you heard about Lock Knob? LockKnob.com? Lock Knob is a revolutionary product invented by a musician for musicians, solving the long-time problem of lost settings. How many times have you been at a gig or a session only to have to reset all of your settings on your amp or your pedals because they move during transit? You can upgrade your existing knobs on your amp, pedals, mixer, guitar, almost anything with a pot, with an all-aluminum quality made reusable knob that does more than just look pretty. Never lose your settings again. Lock it down with Lock Knob. Go to LockKnob.com for more.
Welcome to Guitar Radio Show, the show dedicated to the guitar player, guitar maker, gear builder, and purveyors of such items that you may not know about, but should. Here's your host, Mark Davin.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 152 of Guitar Radio Show, also known as the Sears Catalog for Gear Builders. We've got a really special episode today. This is a Monday episode with Miss Sue Foley, great blues guitarist. Some say she's the apple of Clifford Antone's eye. She is originally from Canada and came to Austin, and just the town fell in love with her. And that was a long time ago, and she's back. And she's got a new record that's coming out. She's actually in the midst of a Kickstarter program to gather the funds to record this record. The name of the record is going to be called The Ice Queen. Folks, go to Kickstarter.com and go to the search and type in Sue Foley, F-O-L-E-Y, and donate. I think you're going to want to after you hear this this episode. I can't wait to hear more of this music. Guitar Radio Show is also donating to this Kickstarter, as well as many, many other folks. And so far, it's going pretty good. But that doesn't mean she doesn't need your help. So let's see if we can make that happen and get some more great blues guitar happening. I think you're going to dig it. She's going to have a lot of great people on the record. Mike Flanagan, great Hammond B player, and George Raines on drums, as well as a cast of others, a huge cast of others, which I'm really, really excited about, and I can't wait. But in the meantime, folks, don't forget about GuitarRadioShow.com, GuitarRadioShow@gmail.com. Right now, we don't have any giveaways, but we'll have some stuff coming up after the first of the year. I've got some really cool and interesting information about DNA guitars. Here in this month of November, we've got a couple of special announcements. Go to DNAGuitarCompany.com for more on them. We're proud to have them as a sponsor. In the meantime, let's hear a little bit of Sue Foley, and then we'll get right into the interview. What do you say? I want to thank everybody who was instrumental in getting this started for me, both Terry and Kaylee, and I'm really excited about it. It was great to talk to her. I just got to see her recently play here at the Jungle Show at Antone's with Billy Gibbons, Jimmy Vaughn, Chris Layton on drums, and of course the one and only the Drifter, Mike Flanagan, on the Hammond B3. And then again recently over Halloween weekend over at Seaboys here in Austin. And man, just she never disappoints. Just great, great, great guitar player. And just take a listen right now and you'll know what I mean. You ready? Here we go. Guitar Radio Show, guitarradioshow.com.
Guitar Radio Show.
right, people. Somebody that I've been wanting to interview a long time. I actually been listening to her since, I guess, 1993. You know, she's not originally from Austin, but she's Austin family. Let's put it that way. We have Sue Foley on the show. How are you, Sue?
Hey, I'm good. How are you doing?
All right, man. Hey, listen, it was so great to meet you the other night at Seaboys.
Yeah.
It was fun.
It was great.
It was such a good show, too. And just a couple of weeks ago, you did the Jungle Show with Mr. Flanagan and Chris Layton and Billy Gibbons and Jimmy Vaughn.
And yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that must have been pretty trippy. You know, it was so wild.
Very cool.
It's so wild, you know, because those two guys are big heroes for me, you know. And they have been for a long, long time. And it was funny, and I don't know if you even realize this or not, and I don't want to make you blush or nothing, but at one point, y'all were, you know, standing all next to each other, and, you know, Billy played a little bit, Jimmy played a little bit, and then they let you go off and play a little bit. At one point, you were just smoking. You're just smoking, and Billy elbowed Jimmy, and he looked at him, he kind of mouthed the words, WTF. She's so good. You were just... You know, not for nothing, but, you know, I love these guys, but you smoked them.
Oh, thank you. That's great. In the great tradition of guitar, you have to try to burn everybody in sight.
You know, and I don't think you were even trying, but you were just cutting heads. It was great.
Oh, thank you.
It was a blast, and it was... you know, one of the things that I really enjoy about your playing is, you know, and I was thinking about it today. I was like, you know, some people play the blues, some people feel the blues, and some people are the blues. And you're one of those people. You are the blues.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that sounds really heavy.
Well, and I mean it in the best possible way.
Well, I mean, that's an ultimate compliment. I mean, I wouldn't even ever say that about myself, but I mean... That's a great compliment.
Well, you don't have to. You don't have to.
I will. I don't know if I can even take that, you know.
You don't have to say it. I will.
Okay. Thank you.
And, you know, yeah. It's interesting because there's, you know, on your first record, and I was listening back to Young Girl Blues earlier this morning, and I'm listening to it, and I'm going, wow, you know, she really was so fiery. How old were you when you recorded that record?
I think 21.
You were 21 when you recorded that record.
Yeah.
So you were full of fire here. And not that there wasn't, you know, I thought it was very precise. You were full of fire and all that. But there's this finesse that you have now that I watched, you know, the last two shows that I saw you in just a couple of weeks apart from each other. There's fire and finesse happening now. And this fluidity of your playing, you know, I took a video and I posted it up on our. It was when the mic went out during the first set, right before the Bessie Smith song they were doing, and they had to change the mic, and you guys decided to just go ahead and blast through an instrumental number, and it was this kind of jump blues, and it was
right.
And you just tore it up, and it was funny. I was playing the video for a couple of people. Really good guitar players here in Austin, and they were just like, it was really cool to watch their faces while they watched it. I wasn't watching it. I was watching them watch it. It's always so cool to watch somebody's jaw just go, oh man. So there's this fluidity that you've got going on. Now I know that you were not playing for a while. Not playing out for a while. Were you still playing every day and practicing, or what were you, you know, what was going on during that time?
Well, I was always playing out. I just always wasn't doing the Sue Foley show. but I've been playing steady for the last, I don't know, I've never really stopped.
Oh, okay.
The only time I slowed down was when I first had my son, but he's 19 now, and even then I was like back on the road in a couple of months.
So when you were working on your degree, you were still out there playing all the time?
Yeah, I was. I mean, pretty much. And I did my MA, my graduate degree, basically through correspondence. I mean, I had a kid taping the lectures for me, and I was going back in and forth, you know.
Wow.
But I got through it, yeah.
Wow. That's intense.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about spinning plates. That's crazy.
Yeah, that was a little nutty, but I made it, which is good.
So how does a punk rocker from Ottawa become a blues guitar player?
Yeah, I think a very organic path, actually, from punk to what my friend was into was early British Invasion.
Yeah.
Music, and he was, I had a friend, and he was into that, and I was into the punk, and then he kind of hit me to the early Stones, mm-hmm. and the early Who, and he was really into that, and mm-hmm. I really thought they were so related, I just gravitated towards that, and I'd grown up with the Stones anyway, mm-hmm. so listening to the really early stuff, and then realizing they were playing blues, and sort of just reading about them, and, you know, it was all very organic. I mean, it was mostly the Rolling Stones. I could mm-hmm. almost attribute everything to my favorite band. You know?
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. You know, my 15-year-old daughter is playing guitar now, and it's wonderful. It was something I've always hoped for, but never pushed on her.
Uh-huh.
I just kind of hope that, you know, with all the guitars all around the house, and there are many. That there, you know, the osmosis would take place. I'm a left-handed guitar player, and she just picked up the guitar left-handed, and she's also a lefty as well. But she is really into, I guess, for lack of a better word, what they call punk now.
Right.
You know, it's very different than what it was then. You know, and so recently she was playing me this band. And I was like, well, that's interesting. I go, they kind of sound like this band. And I, you know, so I started drawing a line backwards for her all the way back to the Who, you know,
oh, good.
Through Iggy and the Stooges, all the way back to the Who. And, you know, cause really in many respects, what was going on between the mods and the rockers was punk. And, you know, and what was going on in Detroit with Iggy was punk. That was the birth of it all right there, I think. Anyway.
Yeah.
And, absolutely. So it was interesting to draw the line for her, and now she's starting to listen to that as well, and it's very gratifying to have that happen. Did you have somebody that was doing that for you, or was this...
No, actually, just me and my friend. We were just doing it together, as sort of like little detectives, and I was really into it on my own as well.
Yeah,
you know, I've always sort of considered myself a bit of a musicologist in a way. I was always like to just research stuff and look stuff up,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, find out about stuff. So,
yeah, I mean, it's
nobody at home, and we had guitars around too, which was cool. And that was why I play guitar, because there was just guitars in the house. My dad and my three older brothers played.
Right.
Normal. It was just normal.
Right. And now you're playing cello too.
Yeah, sort of. I'm not practicing like I should, but Mark, I'm going to start pretty soon. It's staring at me from its case right now. But yeah, in 10 years, I'll be an old, mediocre cellist.
Well, what did you remember the comedian Jack Benny?
Yeah.
Yeah, he used to say that you have to play the violin at least 20 years just to stink at it.
Yeah, right. It's the same with this beast. Yes, it's beastly. But I love it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful instrument. Absolutely.
It is.
Any stringed instrument to me is just, it's just fascinating to me.
I'm the same way. I like the strings, not for the keys very much.
Yeah.
I don't like those things.
Yeah.
I like the strings.
Yeah. So how did the whole you getting invited to do the Jungle Show thing happen?
kind of organic. I think I had come down to Austin since July and kind of played some with Mike Flanagan and different sort of setups, and hung out at Seaboys, opened for Jimmy Vaughn, and you know, so I was just kind of hanging out, seeing everybody again, and I sort of got wind that Mike was going to do that show, or that he was thinking of it, and I just sort of threw my name in the hat. I just was like, oh, hey, I'm here. I was like, maybe I could open. I was like actually asking to open up. I was like, you know, if you need an opener, I can fly down. It's really easy for me. So, but it turned out that they needed an extra, like, person.
Mm-hmm.
I think they usually, you know, use like Charlie Sexton, but he was out of town, so they kind of needed another, you know, person who could pull out a few songs. And mm-hmm. I was like, yeah.
Well, yeah. It was so great. Yeah. It really was. It was just such...
Oh,
the whole evening was just such a treat for everybody. I mean, the place was packed out, as you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was fun. It really was a lot of fun. So, let's go back to that whole thing now. You're in Ottawa, and you... And so who was it that you heard? Was it Muddy?
Muddy was one of the first blues guys we heard through the Stone stuff. Yeah, we listened to Jimmy Reed and Clint Harpo and Howlin' Wolf. But it was Muddy was like really the main guy, I think. And when we first heard Muddy doing the same songs that the Rolling Stones played, we thought it was really weird. I remember.
Because it was slower.
Just thinking, yeah, it was really slow. And I was like, whoa, it's really slow.
Yeah.
I don't know about this, you know, but... And then we went and snuck into a James Cotton concert. I was about 15. And we went and saw James Cotton, and I basically had some kind of crazy epiphany at that moment. I don't know why. It just turned out it was James Cotton at that moment, and I was like, this is what I have to do.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've often said about James Cotton, I mean, yeah, Muddy for sure. Muddy, you know, played very... it was seething and sexual, you know, that beat that he had. But I got to say, I think a whole lot of babies got conceived to James Cotton music.
You think?
I do.
Wow, that's good to hear. I mean, I loved it at the time, and he had that, you know, real hot Chicago band. And
yeah.
It was just really good. It was really good. Mm. High energy. And, you know, I'd never seen music in a club before. I'd only been to rock concerts. The whole thing just... you know, affected me so strongly.
Yeah. So, and that's when you said, okay, it's going to be blues for me.
Yeah, I was just like, it's got to be this. Yeah. I have to learn how to do this. I don't know what it is. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I have to do it. It's a weird calling.
So how did you do it?
Well, the first thing we started going to the local blues jam, which is, you know, usually what you do, and started to meet musicians, and it took a few months to kind of like to get up there on, to have the nerve just to get on stage, and then it took a good year before it could shake the nervousness out of my fingers to even play a note properly. I was so nervous.
Yeah.
And we were underage and sneaking in, borrowing an idea. It was a whole thing, you know, skipping out after my dad worked midnight, so I would like sneak out after he'd leave at like 11 p.m. to go to work, and I'd actually sneak out after he went to work, and I had to make it home before he got, you know, home at 7 in the morning. I'd get in at 2 or 3 and go back to bed and go to high school.
Bleary-eyed. All bleary-eyed going to high school.
Yeah.
Smelling
then
like...
By the time I was... Yeah.
Smelling like cigarette smoke.
Yeah, it smelled like a bar, you know. It's crazy. And by the time I was 16, I was gigging
right.
with some of the people from the local scene. And at 18, I moved away to Vancouver and started my own band out there. Mm. I was trying to get a gig. I was trying to show up into town and get a gig, but I was a long way from home. Nobody knew me, and I was just a, you know, 18 years old girl. I mean, who wanted to hire me, you know? Nobody. So I had to form my own group, and I found some young guys my age at the Blues Jam, of course, who were raring to go, and we just, you know, I just got into it and just kind of went full steam ahead.
And they were with you a long time.
Yeah, they were. They really were.
Yeah.
The bass player, John, was with me for 10 years almost.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Were you ever a fan of Billy Butler, who was a guitar player on for Bill Doggett?
Yeah, I mean, we loved Bill Doggett. We had this obsession with Bill Doggett, which is really weird.
Yeah,
because I mean, who has an obsession with Bill Doggett? First of all, a Canadian, you know, Canadian kids in the I guess it was the early 90s, and then the 80s, late 80s. I mean, we were obsessed. We found all these Bill Doggett records, and we used to listen to them all the time. And yes, absolutely. And I got to record with Bill Doggett. I don't know if you know that.
No, I didn't know that.
I did. I actually recorded the Honky Tonk with Bill Doggett himself.
You got to be kidding me.
I'm not kidding you.
What was that like?
I was crazy. Like, life-changing.
Yeah, holy cow.
Yeah.
I've seen you play it. And
yeah, and it turned out it was a Shanicky recording thing, and they just called me in for a session, and one afternoon we were on the road in upstate New York, and they just said, hey, you want to come play on the session? We got Bill Doggett and Rufus Thomas and Chuck Rainey and all these cats from New York, and I was like, sure. I said, Bill Doggett, I knew who Rufus Thomas was, and I was like, Rufus Thomas is great, but I was like, Bill Doggett, are you kidding me? I'm there. I'm like, you don't even have to pay me. I'm just going to be there, like, Bill Doggett is the stuff, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, that's just that driving beat. It was...
Yeah.
I mean, I heard it from my dad. It was one of my dad's favorite songs. That and, Honky Tonk Part 1 and 2 was like one of his favorite tunes. And we had the 45 where you had to turn it over for Part 2.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
And... that and a song, I can't remember who did it, a song called The Stroll. You remember that?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to revisit all that stuff. We were really, like, we loved Bill Doggett.
Oh,
like,
man. It was stuff that got played around the house all the time. It's why I got so into the blues and that type of music, early rock and roll, early doo-wop and stuff like that. Yeah, when I hear you play, like I was talking about the fluidity before, where did all of that come from for you? Because I watch you play and I go, man, why am I not that fluid? How do I get fluid like that? How did that happen for you?
I don't know. I'm not sure what you even mean.
Well, you're just, you know, first off, you play a style of like a lead rhythm. You know what I mean by
right.
that?
Yeah.
But in between that, there's these runs that, you know, are blues runs, but even there's some jazz runs in there, too, that you're intermingling. It's just this movement that you have as you know, I wish I had something to play for you. I actually recorded the Jungle Show. I should send it to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll send you a copy. It's just for me. I don't do anything else with it. It's just so I can relive that that moment again.
Nice.
But it was your playing is just so. That's the word. It's the only word I can really use is fluid, in that how you move across the fretboard.
Well, thanks. I feel very comfortable.
Yeah, that's definitely. Obvious, you know, especially what I saw on Saturday night at Seaboys. You were even more, you seemed even more comfortable there when it was just the three of you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, my favorite guy to watch was Clarence Gatemouth Brown.
Uh-huh.
And I watched him a lot, and I was really into his technique and his right hand in particular.
Yeah.
I was really into the right hand technique of people. Gate was really, really fluid. Gate was effortless. I think it was that effortless sort of lack of, he was so nonchalant about everything. And he would be doing, like, crazy hard stuff, and all the guitar players would, jaws would be on the floor, and he'd just be, like, looking at them like, he'd be looking at them like he's picking his teeth, like, okay, give me a break, you know? Like, yeah, some guitar players make the guitar face, and it's, like, it's so hard.
Yeah.
Well, he was the opposite. He was just like, this is easy. I'm breathing, you know?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a good way of putting it. He's breathing, yeah. And that's what I get when I watch you play or hear you play. It's just, it's like, well, like I said earlier, it's that you're not just playing the blues. You are the blues. It's like there's not a delineation between you and the instrument. There's kind of one organic thing that's going on there. You know, like,
that's a really nice thing to hear. I mean, I feel like really comfortable on the instrument.
Yeah. Well, you were talking about right hand technique before. And, you know, you play with a thumb pick a lot of the time.
Uh-huh.
And then you're pulling at the strings with the other, you know, two or three fingers. And sometimes it's like this almost classical guitar-like movement with the right hand. I was trying to say, how could I put that into words? What is that? It's like a feather stroking almost.
That's from studying flamenco.
Okay.
Technique, which is basically the same techniques they do use in classical music.
Right,
you know?
And it's funny because I was a classical guitar major in college, you know, when I'm playing a gut string guitar, I'm fine with that, but I've never been able to master that on the electric so much. I've always been kind of just got to have the pick in my hands. But you have this. Are you using a fairly light touch when you're working across the strings like that?
Yeah, and you know, I was talking to Billy Gibbons because I use 10 to 46 gauge strings,
right?
And he was like, "Oh, these are heavy."
Yeah.
Well, I'm like, "Really? He uses 7s?"
Yeah, I know.
I've never even heard of 7s.
He had them specially made.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Mexican lotteries, the Mexican lottery ones, right?
Yeah. And he's like, I'm like 7s. He goes, oh, yeah. And he's cool. Like, he's got a really good tone, and he's got a real sort of visceral sound, which when you think about it, he's playing with 7s, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
Talk about light touch. Why am I
working
so hard?
Well, it's funny because that's the story I heard was that he was using back in the day. He was using 10s, 11s, and B.B. King said to him, "Why are you working so hard?"
That's what he told me.
Yeah,
and I was wondering about that. So I use 10s. I mean, maybe I need to lighten up even. But I don't know. I've been using 10s my whole career.
Yeah, I'm using 9s. I'm saving 8s for when the arthritis kicks in.
I mean, I know Gate Matthews, light string, so did Albert Collins.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. And it looked like they were really had a heavy touch. Well, not Gate, but Albert Collins looked like he was really, really digging into the strings, but I guess he wasn't.
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah, absolutely. So you got a new record coming out in the new year.
Yes.
And you got a title for it yet or no?
Yeah, it's called The Ice Queen.
The Ice Queen?
Yes. The Ice Queen.
Any particular reason you're calling it that?
Well, there's a song I wrote called The Ice Queen.
Oh, okay.
It's a straight slow blues song with, you know, good guitar. And I don't know, like, the song just resonates with people, and I like the title, and just kind of made sense. So, you know, I'm from Canada, and it just made sense on a lot of levels.
Right.
So I'm going with that.
Cool. And you're doing a Kickstarter for this, right?
Yeah, a big one.
Cool. Cool. Well, we want to help out. What, do you have any information about that yet that you can share with us? And
it's called. Yeah, I guess it'd be if you just look me up, Sue Foley. Ice Queen.
Okay, go to Kickstarter.com and in the search bar just type in Sue Foley Ice Queen.
Yeah. I think so.
Okay.
That would work. I can also send you the link.
Yeah, send me the link.
I'm pretty excited about it. We're going to record it in Austin with Mike Flanagan and Chris Bell, the engineer, and George Rains, and Johnny Bradley, and who knows who else. You know, we haven't really decided on special guests, but there'll probably be some too.
That's great. Definitely send me the link. Folks, we're going to put the link in the show notes for this particular episode. So folks, y'all got to pitch in, help out here with the Ice Queen. And we're going to, we'll put it up on the social media too and get people knowing about it.
I really appreciate that. And it's going to be great. I mean, you can't go wrong with all those great people.
Oh, heck yeah. And we're gonna put that out. We were able to help out our good buddy Guthrie Trapp in Nashville with his thing, so we're gonna do the same with you, because we really love you. We think you're great.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that.
So I gotta ask you about gear. So the other night, now I don't know what you were playing. Were you playing through one of the magnetones at the Jungle Show, or were you playing through your Tweed?
I was playing through the Magnetone that Billy Gibbons recommended I play through. And I love
the white one, right? You were playing through the white 59? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love those amps, man. They are great.
I've never used it before, and it was great.
Yeah, it's interesting. I had Ted Kornblum on the show. He's the head guy over at Magnetone. And when I played through them, he and I sat down and I played through one of them. I was just amazed how all I really needed was a guitar, a chord, and the amp. I didn't need anything else. It was all happening as it should.
Yeah.
And but the other night I saw you playing with this Tweed. It was a 410 Tweed?
Yeah, that was just a straight ahead bassman.
Uh-huh.
That belongs to Charlie Day
and
not Charlie Day, Charlie Sexton.
Oh, Charlie Sexton. Okay. So
big difference there.
So
yeah, Charlie Sexton lent me that.
That's a killer. That's a killer amp.
Yeah, I think it sounds really good. And he's changed a couple of the speakers. I think he's got big JBLs on the bottom. It weighs a ton.
Does it?
But sounds killer.
Okay, I just got your link, so that's great, folks. I'm going to be putting that up right away, and we're going to start telling folks about it. So you were using that your famous or infamous, whichever you prefer, pink Paisley Telly. That now has definitely got some wear on it. It's all broke.
Yes.
It's broken. It's broken real nice. I like it like that.
Yes, thank you. Me too.
What year is that Telly?
I think it's an 87, 88. I bought it brand new in 87, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I've played it on probably every show since then.
Yeah. And you have a yellow one too, right? Is that a backup or something?
No. I have a couple backups, but I never bring them. I have one called an Illumisonic that was made by a guy. I think he's in Long Island, and he makes these good Kellys out of aluminum. And it's a really cool. It's a really cool guitar. And then I have another custom made one Kelly. So I've got three Kellys, but only one Fender.
Interesting.
And then I have an Epiphone, an Epiphone hollow body, one steel string acoustic, and two nylon string Nikos.
Is that Telly all stock?
Yes. Completely. And I don't think I just had the frets done in Austin. But otherwise, I think I've had the frets done three times. Everything else is still stock.
And I noticed that you were using some sort of pedal with that amp the other night. But your sound was just so, it was amazing because it's got that, I call it the round sound. You know.
Did you like that pedal?
I did. What was that?
It was, it's a boost, like just a clean boost by, oh boy, what's the company? Shoot, I should know. It's just like a really, it's like a boutique pedal that's just a clean boost, and I just use it to, so I don't have to run the amp too hot, you know? Especially when you have an amp that big.
Yeah, you got to let me know because I'm interested. That's really cool because it really pushed the front end of that amp and just really took it over the top. It was really nice. It was a really great sound. And that's another thing I love about the blues is that everything gets simplified. You know.
Yeah, it's so simple. I try to play clean for the most part.
Yeah. But I've heard you play with some gain too, and it's like on some of your records, you've played with some gain, and you can shred with the best if necessary.
Thanks. Thank you.
I wanted to ask you before I let you go. I wanted to ask you about Guitar Woman, and
okay.
It's a project that you were working on for since 2001. And so many great people on there, you know, people that weren't from Austin, people that are from Austin. I mean, some guitar players that just, you know, don't really, you know, get noticed nearly enough, you know, like Vicki Peterson, for one, you know, because they were such a poppy band, nobody really got to notice what a great guitar player she is. She really is just such a good guitar player. And, Carolyn, obviously, who I love to death.
Carolyn Wonderland.
And Cindy Cashdollar, who just, her pedal steel just makes me want to weep.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, she's so good. She's so great. Yeah, I spoke with almost 100 interviews. I think maybe more. And I'm actually just picking it up again and trying to clean it up.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of got a little overwhelmed, lost my direction with that one just because there was so much stuff that I did and then so much historical data that I was like overwhelmed by the amount of it.
Yeah.
You know? Talk about not knowing any women guitar players, and then it's just like, oh, well, there's just so many I can't even
know it. Yeah. Like, yeah.
And way more now,
because
that was 10 years ago that I started interviewing, and then actually even more than that 10 years ago. And I kind of put it down, and I started to pick it up again recently and just kind of trying to organize my files. I just had a massive amount of stuff.
I mean, this is going to make an amazing book.
Well, thanks. Yeah.
I mean,
it's some really cool people. I mean,
yeah.
Full chicks for sure,
and so many that don't get their just due, you know, like Sister Rosetta Tharpe, you know.
I know. I mean, what a trailblazer!
Oh my goodness! I mean, I'll never forget the first time I heard her play. I was just like, I've got to get more of this, and I started going crazy, digging through bins of old record stores that back in the there was still some vinyl, and I found a whole bunch of great stuff, and. You know, I felt like a thief almost. I was like, nobody else knows.
I know. It's like that.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was like,
crazy.
Oh, it's my, you know, and there's somebody that I would love to interview Bonnie Raitt and stuff like that. But there's somebody in particular that I really want to interview. And I'm curious to ask you about what it was like when you spoke to her was Carol Kay.
Oh, amazing. You could probably interview Carol Kay, no problem.
I got to reach out. I really got to reach out because...
Yeah, she's really accessible, and you should reach out soon because she's up in age.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
I mean, this part, she wrote the bass line to so many... I mean, the beat goes on.
I know. She's unbelievable, and she's really outspoken and smart. Knows so much about music.
Yeah.
I got an amazing interview with her.
So when you did the interview, did you do it with video or was it all just you taking notes?
It was cassette tapes, and I have a whole bunch of cassette tapes.
Wow.
Hopefully not rotting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Because, you know, I think to myself, what an amazing movie this would be. What an amazing documentary it would be.
Well, at the time... they were making a movie about her life when I talked to her, but I don't know whatever happened to that.
Well, I know The Wrecking Crew came out. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did. That's great.
Oh, fantastic. Just great. And that whole section on her was just really, really great. And you know, I still believe that that Sonny and Cher song would not have been a hit without that bass line.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
You know?
Yeah, that was a great documentary. And she's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're going to be picking that back up again.
Yep.
That's cool.
I will be. I am, actually. I started it, and then I got distracted again with this recording stuff. But actually, I'm getting an assistant. That's what I need. I need help. A lot of work.
Well, you know, just that project alone could keep somebody busy 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week.
That's right.
It really could, you know. Well, I don't want to keep you too much longer, but I just want to let you know that I really dig what you do and always have. And it was great to see you with those guys 2 weeks ago and then the other night with Mike and Chris. It's, you know, I hope you come back to Austin even more. Because
I think I will. We'll do that recording and everything and...
Yeah.
Well, by ear, but it's great to get back. And yeah. I'm really so happy. I'm so happy that I've been going back. And
yeah.
There's still so much good music there that you can't hear anywhere else.
No, it's the truth. It's why I'm here.
Working to go see Jimmy Vaughn every week, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Unheard of.
It's funny because I'm there so often, after a while, they're like, what is with this guy? Doesn't he have anything else to do?
I know.
It's, you know, I have to ask you, because I ask everybody from Austin who comes on the show. I had Tommy Shannon on, Dave Grissom, and I always ask everybody this. If you're from Austin, you'll understand. If you've ever been to Austin, you'll understand. What's your favorite breakfast taco?
Oh, boy. Yeah, I'm trying to think. I don't know. I'm probably old school, like Cisco's or something. You know, I don't really know all the new places.
There's one place you got to go to next time you're back. It's over in the Rosedale section on 45th and Burnett. It's called.
Okay.
It's called. La Cocina di Consuelo.
Oh.
And get the flour breakfast burrito. Oh my lord!
Okay.
It's amazing.
Good. I mean, yeah. I'm jealous. You can do that.
Yeah, it's right up the road from the studio, so it's pretty much an all day, an everyday thing for me.
Well,
okay. Sue, I can't thank you enough for being on the show. It's so great to talk to you, and we look forward to. So the Kickstarter is going to be for the month of November.
Yes.
And you start recording in December.
I am counting on it.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to help out as much as we possibly can here at the show. And
I appreciate that.
And
yeah.
Let everybody know. Matter of fact, we're going to try and air this next Monday. That's what we're going to do.
Oh, well, yeah, let me know, and I'll give you a plug on MySpace.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So I have a lot of guitar players on my social media.
Right on.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So the name of the album is going to be Ice Queen, folks. And if you want to find out more, you can go to Kickstarter and just type in Sue Foley Ice Queen. I'm going to be posting the links all over social media. You can go to the Facebook page at Guitar Radio for Guitar Radio Show, and also on guitarradioshow.com. As well as Twitter and all those other places. So folks, go and check that out. And thanks so much.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
My pleasure, and best of luck. We'll see you back in Austin.
All right. You hold on 1 second, but we're going to sign off right here.
folks, my interview with Sue Foley, and she's got this new record that she's getting ready to record here in Austin. It's called The Ice Queen, and she's got a Kickstarter program for it. It's starting to look pretty good. We got to get more backers. More backers. Go to Kickstarter.com and look for The Ice Queen by Sue Foley. And get in there and help. Let's help out. What do you say? Links are included in this episode. So if you're listening on iTunes or you're listening on Stitcher Radio, Spreaker, or any of the other places all over the planet, please go to guitarradioshow.com and you can find the actual link right to Sue's Kickstarter page and you can help out. All right? What do you say? Come on, y'all. Let's do it. We got to get out of here, but in the meantime, I want to remind you, this Wednesday on GuitarRadioShow.com, we've got Vinny Smith from VPix. Really cool interview that I did with him. He's a great guy. He's one of those people that you meet him and you feel like you've known him your whole life. He's just a big sweetheart, and I love him to death, and I love his picks. And it's really interesting. There's a lot to be discussed about repetitive stress injuries, and using his picks can really help with that. And I'm somebody who actually suffers with that type of thing. So it really resonated with me. All right, we got to get out of here. In the meantime, folks, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Keep on playing, and please buy it. Don't steal it. We'll see you on the next episode of Guitar Radio Show. Peace.
I like this crowd already.
GRS Production.
New episodes of Guitar Radio Show air every Wednesday on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podbay, Player FM, Podomatic, and of course on GuitarRadioShow.com.